From KPFK Pacifica Radio in Los Angeles, this is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this show on Free Speech TV and listen to it on Pacifica radio stations and affiliates nationwide. House Republicans are planning to vote on their behemoth and hugely unpopular tax reform bill by Thursday. A new analysis by the Congressional Budget Office has concluded that because their bill costs the Treasury so much money, $1.5 trillion over 10 years, it would trigger automatic cuts to Medicare under a separate set of rules called pay-as-you-go. So to reward their rich friends with tax cuts, House Republicans are apparently willing to cut $25 billion per year to the Medicare program. Meanwhile, Republican senators are also tackling their own version of the bill. Senate Finance Committee Chair Orrin Hatch made two major changes to the House version. He wants to end the Obamacare individual mandate and sunset individual tax cuts for wealthy Americans in order to trim the bill's costs. In targeting Medicare and Obamacare, has the GOP turned its tax reform plan into a stealth attack on healthcare? My guest is Lindsay Koshgarian. She is the research director at the National Priorities Project. Welcome to the program, Lindsay.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks so much for joining us. So first, let's talk about what the House bill, what this Congressional Budget Office's analysis of the House bill means. And of course, we shouldn't be surprised when we have, when this bill is going to cost the government $1.5 trillion over 10 years, that means somewhere else the government is going to have to trim they're basically estimating, and this is just based straightforward math, $1.5 billion per year in spending. $150 billion a year in spending every year for the next 10 years. I suppose, I don't know if the Republicans realize that Medicare would automatically be the place that cuts would trigger.
You know, I think Republicans who didn't realize that are obviously realizing that now that the Congressional Budget Office has come out with this report. And it shouldn't come as a huge surprise to anyone, though. What all Republicans in Congress likely understood at the outset with this tax plan is that when you plan to cut federal revenues by $1.5 trillion, and especially when as many Republicans are not fans of increased national debt, that it's going to, in the end, result in spending cuts somewhere. What the Congressional Budget Office report has said is that not only is that a matter of political likelihood, but it's actually a matter of legal necessity.
Right, this pay-as-you-go set of rules. And this is why we have the Congressional Budget Office. This is why this separate entity does the analysis. They project what a bill would cost, because our lawmakers aren't necessarily experts in, you know, the entirety of all the laws and the rules of government. So it's very important whenever we are tackling and whenever lawmakers are tackling a bill of this magnitude with this many moving parts, that they allow analysis from offices like the Congressional Budget Office in order to understand the full ramifications of the bill, right? Aren't they moving way too fast?
Yes, and in some cases, they've been moving with some of the things they've tried to do this year. They've moved faster than the Congressional Budget Office was able to.
Exactly.
The Congressional Budget Office is nonpartisan, and it's an extremely qualified group of analysts who are able to put together estimates of like this for what it will really mean for the budget and for our country when Congress proposes something like this. And in this case, they've said that as currently written, the proposed tax plan could cut $25 billion from Medicare in 2018.
So that basically means, and we're talking about a few percentage points in cuts, but this is, you know, our senior Americans and everyone who relies on Medicare losing out, possibly getting fewer benefits, fewer things covered. And what has led some people to say the tax bill is now turning into a healthcare bill is that the Senate version of the bill goes after Obamacare. So Orrin Hatch, in order to, again, save money, wants to end the individual mandate on Obamacare. This has been a long favored target of Republicans, though, hasn't it?
It is. And it's interesting because the individual mandate is not one of the most well understood aspects of the Affordable Care Act, but what it does is by making sure that all of us participate in the health insurance system and makes sure that, you know, insurance costs don't spiral out of control for people who are left in the healthcare system, who actually need to take advantage of receiving healthcare by people who are healthy enough that they choose to opt out. So it keeps all of us in the system, and it works the way health insurance is intended to work, that, you know, we all pay something in. When someone draws the short straw and is unlucky and gets sick and needs to take advantage of healthcare, they're able to do that. But the only way it works is if enough of us are a part of the system. So the individual mandate is really crucial to the Affordable Care Act working the way that it does.
It's like requiring all drivers to have car insurance.
That's right. It's so if only people who had accidents had to pay for accidents, the cost would be much higher. But because we all pay in, you're able to get your car fixed if you're in an accident, you know, without having to pay the full cost of that at the time it happens. And health insurance works the same way. And, you know, the analysis of the Senate proposal is that as many as 13 million Americans could lose their health insurance if this goes into effect. Interestingly, we've done an analysis looking at how many Americans could receive health insurance under the individual marketplace. And the number of Americans who could get health insurance from the individual marketplace by the tax cuts proposed just for the richest 1% of Americans, the tax cut that's proposed for them is about $72 billion in 2018. You could use that money instead to cover more than 12 million Americans on the individual marketplace. So there's an almost perfect matchup between the tax cut they want to give to the richest 1% in 2018 and the number of Americans who could lose their health insurance coverage through this Senate proposal.
Right. Let's talk about that. Your organization, National Priorities Project, put out a brief report just this week showing what things the government could pay for rather than the tax cuts to the richest 1%. You did a state-by-state analysis so that people around the country can look at the table depending upon which state they live in and see how many Americans would be able to have the government pay for their individual health insurance premiums. And it's pretty stunning that so many of us would benefit just by allowing the richest among us to continue paying the current tax rate. But what do you make of Orrin Hatch's change that the cuts to wealthy tax rates, to the tax rates that wealthy people pay, will sunset in 10 years? In 10 years, he's saying they'll go back down to their current level. I don't know if this is just a small olive branch towards the middle class and working class Americans.
Well, the question is, one question certainly is, will they really? Mm. Certainly, you know, when we saw in the Bush era, George W. Bush era, there were tax cuts that were intended to sunset also. And as we saw, they did not sunset as they were originally intended. So this is a tactic that's used often in Congress to get something through that you want. And you realize that once you give something, it's much harder to take it away. And so so having given a tax cut to the richest 1% and to profitable mega corporations in America, it's going to be much harder to take it away. And all Congress has to do to stop the tax cuts from ending is decide to reenact them.
Right. And then, of course, it's just a matter of precedent saying now to let them sunset would amount to a tax increase on the wealthiest Americans, the job creators, those benevolent, wealthy individuals that live among us who whose wealth is supposed to trickle down to the rest of us, but somehow never does. What are the other things that the tax cuts to the richest 1% could pay for that your organization looked at?
Well, we uncovered that the analysis by the Institute for Taxation and Economic Policy showed that the tax cut for the richest 1% of Americans, which are people who are earning well above $600,000 a year, would be about $72 billion total. And to kind of put that in perspective, the average health insurance premium for an individual adult is a little bit over $5,000 a year. We could cover 12 million adults on the health insurance market using that $72 billion. We could also use that money, the full amount of a Pell grant, which are grants that are awarded to the lowest income college students in the country. Many of them are first generation college students, people who come from very low income backgrounds. Many of them are from families with poverty or lower incomes. You could grant 12 million Pell grants with that same money and send that many people to college for the first time. We also found that you could create over 600,000 jobs and infrastructure, which, as we remember, was one of Trump's original promises, that he was going to bring back American infrastructure. And infrastructure is a great job creator. It creates jobs where you don't need a college education, but you can make a good living. And we could create over 600,000 jobs building infrastructure with that $72 billion. And the important thing to know is really that we're making a choice here. If we give a $72 billion tax cut to the richest 1%, there will be other things that we can't do as a result.
Well, you mentioned the issue of Pell grants. Students of higher education are specifically facing a very, very dark future under the GOP version of the tax reform bill. It's now, because this is a 400 plus page bill, the details are unraveling bit by bit, even as the GOP House Republicans race to vote on this bill on Thursday. So one of the things that's coming out now is that the Republican tax plan would raise taxes on, of all people, graduate students. The students who already make very little money to begin with would have to pay about half of their stipends in taxes. I mean, I remember when I was a graduate student getting my master's degree, and the only thing that enabled me to be somewhat financially independent and live hand to mouth was the stipend that I got in graduate school. And I cannot imagine having had to pay half of that in taxes. That is incredible that the tax plan does this.
Mm-hmm. Yes, it is. And it's true. Many of us, I went to grad school. Many of us would not be able to go to graduate school if this were the deal that we had to make, if this were the financial circumstances that we would face. And that's an important thing, because increasingly there are careers where a graduate degree is not a bonus, but it's required. And we're seeing, across the board in education requirements for our current job market are going up. And education is still the best path to earning a living wage and to income security. And this is one way of taking that away.
And just to explain that a little bit more, basically what it is that when you're a graduate student, you get a stipend and you're often allowed to get a massive discount or reduction in your tuition. So tuition reductions, because say if you're a grad student at MIT, you can't afford the $50,000 it might cost to go to MIT. So you work as a TA, you get a stipend, and you pay far fewer in far less tuition. The Republican tax bill would require you to report the unpaid tuition as income. So you basically get taxed on something that you aren't paying for, which means that overall your tax bill would go up for some people by 300 or 400%. That is unbelievable. So again, so grad students paying for, paying so that the rich don't have to.
That's right. It essentially creates the mirage of, many graduate schools are quite expensive to attend. If you receive tuition under one of these arrangements, it creates the mirage of something like maybe $50,000 in income that students are not actually receiving. They never see that money. They are receiving the benefit of an education, but that's the kind of thing that often in our tax system we try to encourage, not punish.
So it's interesting that at the same time as we're talking about not having money for all sorts of things, the House just approved $700 billion for weapons manufacturers, 357 to 70, even more than 100 Democrats voting for this thing. This is the National Defense Authorization Act of 2018. And critics are saying that this massive bonanza of $700 billion would easily cover things like free public college tuition, single-payer health care. So it's cash for about 90 F-35 jets. Our priorities are so skewed, and I can't imagine that even ordinary Republicans and supporters of Trump would support these kinds of priorities.
You know, when people find out what we're actually buying for that proposed $700 billion, it's true. There's a lot there that people across the spectrum wouldn't support and don't support. Even Senator McCain, who is one of the biggest cheerleaders for a budget of this size, has things within it that he doesn't support, like the F-35 jet fighter, which has been a massive waste of money, will cost at least $1 trillion over its lifetime, and has never, ever been used in battle. And so far has experienced things like in test flights, catching fire on the runway before it even takes off.
And that's literally our money burning. They are burning our money.
Yes. And what's important for people to know is, first of all, our military spending has been about $600 billion even during the Obama years. And that accounts for about 53% of the total discretionary budget. This proposal of bringing it up to $700 billion, depending on the rest of the package that they approve, could take that up to 60% of spending. And so one of the proposals that's been happening, what Trump has proposed, is literally taking money away from things like education, science, the environment, and funneling it toward the Pentagon.
And whenever you hear things like, how about a free healthcare for everybody? Well, free meaning we pay for it through our taxes. So it's not really free, but healthcare so that everybody's covered, government-sponsored healthcare so that everyone is covered, there's just never enough money for it. There's never enough money for free public college tuition. There's never enough money to cover, you know, child health insurance for everybody. All of these things that we pay for, that we benefit from, there is never enough money for. Let's end with the question of what chances you think the tax reform bill has to pass, actually pass in both houses of Congress. The GOP spectacularly failed multiple times on their healthcare reform bill. It seems as though they're trying to tie together tax reform and healthcare overhaul. Will they be able to succeed?
Well, I'm very, very concerned. The conventional wisdom right now is that some version of this tax plan is very, very likely to pass. It's their highest priority, and in some ways even a higher priority than the repeal of the Affordable Care Act was earlier this year, because they failed to repeal the Affordable Care Act. They're very, very motivated to pass something. I think what we can do is make every attempt possible to influence what that might look like, so that we can get rid of some of the most damaging provisions, and at best maybe actually turn it around and open the doors for a tax plan that would actually work for all Americans. And there are many proposals for a tax plan that would work for all Americans, and that would be both fair and would raise the revenues that we need for important programs that we care about, like infrastructure, like education, like a clean environment. So one way that we can consider using this is much the way we did with the Affordable Care Act, and folks started to say, well, what about single payer? And it opened a new door for that discussion. There is a tax plan that would work for more Americans, and I think it's important that we use this as an opportunity to talk about what that would actually look like.
Interestingly enough, in terms of Americans being heard by Congress, this is a very unpopular bill. There was one Senate provision to the bill that was being considered, and that is to tax stock options for startup companies, tech startup companies. That community, Silicon Valley, created such an uproar, were so upset about it, that the Senate backed off and left it alone. Imagine if they actually listened to the American public like they listen to corporations. Lindsay, give out a website for the National Priorities Project.
Nationalpriorities.org.
And we'll post that to our website later today. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks, Molly.
My guest is Lindsay Koshgarian, Research Director at National Priorities Project. We've been discussing the intricacies of the House and Senate versions of the tax reform bills. I'm Sonali Kohatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter. You can also find us on Facebook, Twitter, iTunes, and Vimeo.